And we've got Jim Mars in your phone calls this half hour before we go live to Egypt to talk with Dr. Zahi Hawass, in charge of Egypt's antiquities. We'll be back in a moment with Jim and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Jim Mars. Jim, I'm amazed at the continual interest in the JFK assassination. It just doesn't seem to die down.
Well, that's because it has not yet reached a truthful resolution. You remember Leon Kozlov, right?
Yeah.
But you're one of the few. He, of course, was the lone assassin of President William McKinley. But nobody except George Norrie and myself know that name because he truly was a lone assassin, and they investigated, and that was the end of that. But everybody in the world knows the name of Lee Harvey Oswald because that case has not been truthfully resolved.
And John Wilkes Booth, everybody knows his name.
That's true.
Why do they all have three names?
That's a good question. I'm sure glad I dropped back to just using my Jim Mars. Maybe that will prevent me from being another designated Patsy.
West of the Rockies, Janice in Portland. Go ahead, Janice.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question and a comment. Actually, I forgot to mention that I have a comment to the screener, but I have read that Woodrow Wilson, on his deathbed, said that he very much regretted signing the Federal Reserve Act and hoped that future generations would demand that it be disbanded, which does lead me to my question. I've also read that Kennedy had discovered, or it came to his attention, that a sitting president could, in Congress, could pay back the initial loan that was initially given to the government by the bankers of the Fed, and then thereby disbanding it. And that happened just weeks before his death. Do you know if that's true or not?
I've heard that story, and to be frank with you, I can't tell you if that's true or not, but I personally tend to doubt it at this point.
Okay.
Because by the time of the Kennedy assassination, the Federal Reserve had become essentially the central bank. You know, George, I don't guess you're my age, but you're close. Do you recall when we were young men, you never heard the Federal Reserve referred to as the central bank, did you?
Never.
That's
never.
Only been in about the past 10 years. And all of a sudden, we have a central bank. And what, see, again, people don't know history. One of the biggest bones of contention over the founding of this country and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was whether or not we should have a central bank. And they tried it two or three different times, the old Bank of the United States, the Bank of America. And in every instance, the bankers messed it up. Poor people got poor and the rich got richer. And it was always a terrible experience. And finally, Andrew Jackson said, that's enough. We don't need this. And from about whenever he did away with the third or fourth incarnation of a central bank, which was along about 1832, something like that, we didn't have a central bank until they slipped one in on us in 1913, calling it the Federal Reserve System. And then 10 years ago, all of a sudden, on major news media, they'd say, the central bank today. And so we got a central bank, and we never even got a chance to vote on it.
Let's go to Taylorville, Illinois. Hey, Ray, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hi, George. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Howdy.
Jim, I have a question for you. With the financial crisis going on, do you think this might be a prelude to the rumored North American Union and the Merrill currency that people keep talking about?
Absolutely. There's no way that we would have voluntarily gone for a new monetary unit, the Amero, which, according to several sources, has already been minted and is just waiting to go. But first, they had to get it to the point to where the American public not only would accept the Amero, but probably demand the Amero. And the only way to do that is to destroy the United States dollar. And we're in the midst of that right now. This money that George was talking about prior to me coming on the program. This is like half our gross national product. I mean, this is unbelievable, unfathomable.
And they've lied to us, Jim. I mean,
and they lied to us right down the line.
In everything.
Yes.
First of all, Iraq was going to cost us $85 billion. There were weapons of mass destruction. We only need $700 billion for a bailout. They forgot about what they asked us for Fannie Mae. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on and on. And members of Congress don't seem to be doing anything about it.
No. And I'm not sure that anything can be done about it short of a dictatorship, because it's beyond redemption. We're broke. We are a broke nation. And the only possible way we can even keep enough money to keep the government running at all is by incurring more and more debt. And what are we up to now? $8 trillion.
Oh, God. Like, who knows? Fernando in Florida, first-time caller. Hey, Fernando.
Good morning, George. Jim. George, hey. I always listen to Coast to Coast. Great show.
Thank you, Fernando.
Jim, I have one question. As you know, no doubt, in Europe, when a dictator, a king, prime minister, or president dies for whatever reason, 10 years later, maximum 25, everything is disclosed. Here we talk about Kennedy. We don't know much about the Spanish-American War. What can we do to have the same thing here, to do the same thing here?
Well, I was trying to advocate this before the election in November, and it didn't do any good, and it won't do any good again. But first thing we do is vote everybody in Congress out of office. And we start over, and we start from scratch, and we elect people who are not rich, who are not looking to be rich, who are looking out for the best interests of the public. And then they can start doing away with some of these secrecy laws, national security blankets, and we need more openness in the government. Now, this is coming, keep in mind that this is coming from a man who served in Army intelligence during the Vietnam War. So I certainly understand that there are certain things, our disposition of troops, some of our contingency plans, that need to remain secret. But we have entirely too much secrecy. The government needs to open up and start leveling with us about the truth of what's going on. And, of course, the reason that ain't going to happen is because the people in positions of power, their hands are dirty, and they're not going to tell on themselves.
Next up, thanks, Fernando. Jim, let's go to Cornelius. Jim, wildcard line. Cornelius, go ahead.
Hey, George and Jim, God bless y'all. I wanted to thank y'all, and a happy Thanksgiving to y'all.
Same to you, Cornelius.
And my question was, I wanted to know how y'all feel about the Antichrist and the Mark of the Beast, or do you believe that's coming up next to, you know, along with the Umero and all like that?
What do you get into that at all, Jim?
Oh, I'm well aware of that. I tend to steer clear of that because so much of that falls under exactly what the caller, what Cornelius said. He said, do you believe? It falls under belief systems. I'm not saying I'm believing it. I'm not saying I don't believe it. I find it fascinating. I mean, the Bible and Revelation does tell us that pretty soon there will come a time when you won't be able to conduct business without the mark of the beast. And, you know, every time I go in, I've kind of gone to a cash and carry basis. This way I don't get too swamped with credit, and I don't have to worry about somebody getting my credit identification, you know, identity theft and all like that. I go in, I pay cash, okay?
What's that? Cash?
Yeah, it's getting to where people look at you funny when you try to pay cash because they want that. They want to run that thing through the little slot, and they want to hear that beep, and they want to see that mark of the beast, you know. So I don't know. Let's just say I'm agnostic on all that. There is certainly interesting to study, but I for one am not going to live my life, you know, based on some belief systems that some people believe in and some people don't.
What's your take on 2012, Mr. Mars?
Well, as I say in the book Above Top Secret, there's an old adage that says when everybody tells you you don't look well, perhaps you ought to lie down.
So
and
true.
When everybody, and I mean everybody from Nostradamus to the Mayan calendar. And, of course, a lot of people think it's just the Mayans. But actually, you can go back and you can find that many cultures have prophecies concerning the last days of the great cycle, the great procession of the constellations. And these include the Mayans, the Hopis, the Egyptians, the Kabbalists, Essenes, the Aero, elders of Peru, Navajos, Cherokees, Apaches, the Iroquois, the Dogon tribe in Africa, and even the Aborigines in Australia. And when they all pinpoint 2012, then you have to start thinking maybe something out of the ordinary is going to happen in 2012. And then I was really astounded to find out that astronomically, in December of 2012, our sun, our solar system, is coming in to a direct alignment with the center of our Milky Way galaxy. And that certainly hadn't happened before.
Isn't that interesting timing, Jim? Huh?
Isn't that interesting timing? And not only that, but they are getting what appears to be radio signals, electromagnetic signals, coming out of the center of the galaxy that are on repeatable and regular intervals to the point to where even National Geographic raised the question about, could this be coming from an intelligent source? So I for one, do not believe that the world's going to end in 2012, like, you know, it's going to blow up or asteroids going to hit us or a sunspot's going to just fry the whole planet. I don't get concerned about that anyway, because if that does happen, what can we do about it, right?
Exactly. Next up.
So I think we're all going to still be here, frankly, but I will say this. You can write this down, and I'll stand by it. In spring of 2013, George, you and I can talk, and we will probably agree that we are not living in the same world that we were living in 2008. Just like right now, you and I can agree, we're not living in the same world we were living in 2000.
You're so right. And I don't know what 2013 will be like, Jim, but I'm going to make my darndest effort to make sure it's a good planet for all of us.
Well, my motto is hope for the best, plan for the worst.
Next up, let's go to you, Sean, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. I've got a two-part question for you.
Sure.
I was wondering if the government's push for digital television is to free up radio wave space for their push on the RFID chips.
I think that's a very, very good intuitive insight. Again, we have government interfering in private industry. First, they tell all the broadcasters that starting next year, they have to broadcast in digital form, okay? And then I think what happened was is that somewhere way up there in the New World Order, somebody said, well, now, wait a minute, if we all go to digital TV, there's a whole lot of poor folks that won't be able to afford to go out and buy a new digital TV. So what do we see now? The government is offering for $40 a converter box so you can convert your TV over. In fact, you can get a coupon for this $40. Both the husband and wife can go apply for one, and so you can actually get $80 worth to get you a digital converter. Now, why do they want that? And I submit to you because somewhere they decided, whoa, what if people quit watching television? They're going to quit being brainwashed. They're going to start thinking about what's happening in their country. They're going to start thinking about what's happening to their economy. You know, if they can't watch the football game on Sunday afternoon, they might actually start thinking about what's really happening to them. We can't have that, so we got to give them all a converter box so they'll all keep staying glued to the TV.
Exactly. And on the second part of my question was, I've heard talks about all this money that's gone missing and everything, and the government won't disclose what they've used it for. I was wondering if that had to do with anything to fund the secret prisons that are popping up across the country.
Oh, they use that money for any number of things. I'll tell you that one of the most far-out ideas, and I'm not writing this off, I'm not saying it's happening because I can't prove it, but I can't discard it either, is that they've used some of these millions and millions and trillions of dollars that they can't account for to build off-world bases. So they think that if things get too tough, they'll just bail and they'll go somewhere else. For example, on September the 10th, 2000, just the day before the attacks of 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld publicly stated that the Pentagon could not account for $2.3 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars. Couldn't account for it. Gee, I had it when I came in. You know, it's amazing.
Poof, it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. So the point is, and again, we're back to the other caller's question about what do we do about this? We've got to have transparency in government. We've got to be able to audit the Fed. We've got to find out what they're doing with this money. Who knows? You know, maybe they're trying to create a black hole somewhere and suck us all in. We all die. You know, we need to know some of these things so that we can have more public input as to some of the things that they're doing that eventually affect us all.
Let's go to your state of Texas. Tammy, you're on with us. Hi, Tammy.
Hello. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Hi. Good, thanks.
And hello, Jim. I'm happy Thanksgiving if I forget to say it at the end.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Tammy.
Thank you. I just happened to get up and I couldn't sleep and I turned on the radio. I tried to call in the other night about Jack Ruby. I'm in my late 40s, but I have a friend, a couple, and we were sitting around about 8 years ago talking, and he said that when he was a young, I guess, teenager, he was roomed with Jack Ruby somewhere. I want to say Waco, but I'm not sure if it was Waco. And he said that him and Jack would hang out in the pool halls and everything, and one day Jack came to him and said that he was going to join, I guess, the mafia or the mob, organized crime. And he tried to get my friend, I'll call him John, tried to get him to join with him, but he wouldn't. He said instead he joined the military, and he said he never seen him again after that until he heard what happened when he shot Oswald. But what I'm thinking is, because I asked my friend, I said, why don't you write a book or why don't you tell somebody? And this man is in his late 60s or maybe, I don't know for sure. He looked at me, he gave me a strange look like he was scared, you know, so I didn't say no more about it. And I forgot it over the years, and I thought more and more about it when I'd hear, you know, talk of the assassination and everything. So I just thought, well, you know, I do know from him saying it that I believe my friend that he was in the organized crime, Jack Ruby.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
There's no doubt about that. In fact, but let me point out that that's another tidbit of information that was denied by the government all the way through the Warren Commission and for several years after that. They denied that Jack Ruby had any connection to organized crime. And now there are several books out there documenting his ties. And actually, I'm not sure what he was telling your friend about. He probably was talking about hooking up with some outfit here in Texas. There was a gambling syndicate, but he was tied up with organized crime all the way back to the days of Al Capone in Chicago.
Jim Mars, thank you so much. The name of the book, Above Top Secret, Jim Mars, the author. I'll be back in a moment as we go live to Egypt on Coast to Coast AM. In a moment, we go to Egypt, where we talk with Dr. Zahi Hawass, who heads up the Supreme Council of Antiquities in Egypt. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. I can't think of one person whose name is mentioned so often on this program and whose name so many of you know. Dr. Zahi Hawass, a world-renowned archaeologist and currently the Secretary General of the Supreme Council of Antiquities and Excavations in Egypt. I mean, he's responsible for the pyramids, the Sphinx, and all these marvelous discoveries that we find in Egypt. And here he is for us for an hour tonight on Coast to Coast, Zahi Hawass. Doctor, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Good to be with you. You know, I promised my father, who was born in Cairo, that one day I will go to Egypt to witness the pyramids firsthand. And I've got to do that, Zahi. I've got to get out there.
Yes.
It's truly remarkable. I remember seeing you on television programs in the United States. You taught here, I think, in the Los Angeles area many years ago.
Yeah,
so you're very familiar with people. Tell me what's new out there in the Gaza Strip area.
You mean Giza yeah. pyramids. You know,
yes.
We still continue the excavation at the tombs of the pyramid builders. And, you know, inside the Great Pyramid of Khufu, you heard about the discovery of the so-called secret doors inside the pyramid. And, you know, that found three doors, two in the south tunnel of the Great Pyramid and one in the northern tunnel. This year, we are choosing another robot to go and reveal the secrets behind these doors. And we have three teams now that designed a robot, an English team and a team from Hong Kong, another one from Singapore. The year 2009 will be the year that we reveal the secrets of the Great Pyramid for the first time. And one thing, you know, in your program, they used to talk about lost civilization.
Yes.
And things are hidden under the right paw of the Sphinx and things like this. And everyone used to ask me for one permission to drill underneath the Sphinx about 2 months ago. And I hope that everyone can hear me now.
Oh, yes.
2 months ago, we found the rising of the water table in front of the Sphinx temple. And we decided to find out the level of the water underneath the Sphinx. We had to drill five drills, three in the immediate front of the Sphinx, one next door to the right paw, two behind the Sphinx. We went down for 70 feet. And we found nothing.
Ugh. I would love for you to find something there.
I know. You would love something, but there is nothing there. People live in fantasy, and they believe of something hidden underneath the Sphinx. I am proving, based on drilling, that there is nothing is hidden underneath the Sphinx. The Sphinx is a solid rock, or a living rock, was made by the son of Cheops, the builder of the Great Pyramid, to represent Khafre, who is the builder of the second pyramid, who is worshipping his father Khufu in that temple in front of the Sphinx. Then all this psychic and lost civilization, it doesn't make any sense. And archaeology proved now that this is not true. And if this is not true, I don't think that you will talk about it in your program anymore.
Well, I know from my father, who was born in Cairo, how proud he is to be from Egypt. And so I grew up, Zahi, with that kind of feeling. And so I can understand how so many people who are Egyptian will stand by that.
No. George, I'm not talking about me as an Egyptian that I'm proud. This is something else. I am telling you that what people in the United States used to believe, that there is something hidden underneath the Sphinx, is not true. Based on the drilling that we made one mm-hmm. month ago in front of the Sphinx and underneath the Sphinx.
Nothing there. With the pyramids at the Giza, do you think the Egyptians of the past had some kind of technology that
no,
we have lost today?
I will tell you something. Nothing has been lost at all. The technology that the Egyptians used is known to all of us. Look at Michelangelo. So when he did decorate the church, you cannot do it now because it was a religious belief. The ancient Egyptians believed that the pyramid was the national project of the whole nation. Everyone in Egypt had to participate in building the pyramid. If you look about, you know Art Bell.
Yes.
Okay. When Art Bell used to make your program, once he wanted to interview me, and I told him, no, you have to come to Egypt first. He came to Egypt, and I showed him how a man in the age of 70 can cut a stone 8 tons weight in 1 minute. How he can do that? The Egyptian knew the anatomy of the stone. Correct. And therefore, this man will stood in front of the stone with his pencil. He will make a line on the weak parts of the stone. and in the middle he will put a piece of iron. He will hit that piece, and the stone will be divided to two parts. Then moving stones and building a pyramid. I just found last week a small pyramid at Saqqara, about 20 feet high. Then what I'm saying, Egypt is not the Great Pyramid only. We have 118 pyramids everywhere.
Exactly.
Then you have to study the Egyptian civilization to understand that what has been used in building the pyramid was based in religious belief.
I may come out there in May and do a series of our radio shows right out there.
Contact me, and I would love to see you.
I might bring my father with me, too. He's in his 80s now, but what the heck? Might as well bring him back there, huh?
Very good.
Zahi, in addition to what's at Giza, there are discoveries all the time. I mean, you're finding some remarkable things there. Do you have projects going on every day?
Yes, I do. I do have now three important projects that I'm doing. The first one, that I'm searching for the tomb of Cleopatra and Mark Antony, that I believe that Cleopatra and Mark Antony were buried in a temple near Alexandria, about 30 miles west. And therefore, we have been excavating inside this temple for the last 3 years. And we found evidence of statues of Cleopatra, and coins had the shape of Cleopatra. And we are using radar in this coming January, that we do hope that the radar will be able to locate the entrance of the tomb of Cleopatra and Mark Antony. The other important thing that I'm searching, I'm excavating inside the Valley of the Kings, looking for the tomb of Nefertiti and the tomb of Ramses VIII. And this is the first time, actually, that any expedition worked inside the Valley of the Kings. There is no excavation done by an Egyptian before. And the excavation is very interesting, and we hope that we can make a discovery soon in the Valley of the Kings. And I always tell people that the Valley of the Kings this year will be very hot with the discoveries. The other important thing, I'm revealing using DNA lab and also the CAT scan machine for the first time the family of Tutankhamun. What about the family of King Tut? We want to know about his father and his mother. We want to know about the people who actually lived with King Tut. We did CAT scan for the first time the mummy of King Tut, and also the mummy of Akhenaten and the mummy of Amenhotep III, and the two fetuses that found inside the tomb. And we hope in January I will announce some of the discovery that reveal for the first time the family of the golden boy King Tut. And finally, there is a very interesting work that I'm doing right now. You know, in the Valley of the Kings, there is a tomb called the Tomb of Seti I. Inside this tomb, there is a tunnel, goes down for 300 feet. A man from Abdul Rasul's family, the family that they knew the secrets of the Valley of the Kings, told him about this tunnel. And he hoped, this has happened 37 years ago, he hoped that one day I will excavate that tunnel. And I'm doing it now. We did reach until now 420 feet. And we do hope to reach the end of this tunnel. And as you see, myself as an archaeologist, very busy now with all this important work that we are working in Egypt for the first time.
Zahi, with some of the excavations where you find some cities in graves and areas like that, how deep under the sand are some of these areas?
You know, it depends. You know, sometimes when we excavate a tomb, we go down for 60 feet.
My gosh. The pyramid
that I just found at Saqqara about a week ago, and I did announce the discovery of this pyramid, was under the sand, about 60 feet under the sand. Then it depends really from a site to a site. The minimum length that will go down, something like 10 feet at least.
There is a tablet that I've seen, and I've always wanted to ask you this, from Abydos. And it is absolutely incredible to me because it looks like incredible technology that may have been around, and it looks like pictures of what could be a helicopter in a big boat and things like that. Have you analyzed that, or what do you think of that one?
I really never heard about this at all. This is the first time I hear about it. No one really ever showed this to me. And sometimes I tell you that some of the public, when they go and they see an ancient Egyptian scene, they could make the interpretation of this scene to be a helicopter or something like that.
Right, but this is not right. True. And in terms of excavations in Egypt, of course, we know what you're doing there. What's happening around the rest of those various countries? Are they, too, trying to discover these remarkable old artifacts?
Yeah, we have 200 foreign expeditions working in Egypt, everywhere. And all of them, they are trying to reveal the secrets from the sand to rewrite the history of Egypt. Then we are making major discoveries almost every week. I always say that we discovered until now 30% only of the Egyptian monuments. And still there is 70% is buried underneath the ground. And therefore, we hope that we'll be able to reveal more secrets, to understand more about the ancient Egyptians.
Well, it's the cradle of civilization. There's no doubt about that. How about the age of the Sphinx and the pyramids? I mean, so many different stories there.
No, the different stories that you hear about it before, it was really just theories that people began to think there is something hidden underneath the Sphinx, like the Casey Foundation. Others used to say that the erosion in the Sphinx body came because of water, that damage that. But, you know, all of this are just imagination. I used to tell people that this theory goes with the wind because it is not based on archaeological research. We do have the archaeological evidence that the Sphinx is dated to 4,500 years ago, only dated to the reign of the builder of the second pyramid at Giza. And the Sphinx was carved with the face of a king and a body of a lion to show that Khufu, the builder of the second pyramid, as Horus, giving offering to the sun god, who was Khufu also, who rise and sits from that temple, then all the archaeological evidence support the theory. But really, the other theories is not based on any evidence at all.
What of the two areas where the Sphinx is and that monument and then the pyramids of Giza, which area fascinates you the most?
You know, I lived all my life next door to the Great Pyramid. I had even a rest house. I got up in the morning, I looked at the pyramid. I lived all my life trying to reveal the secrets in the pyramid. I excavated the tombs of the pyramid builders. I found the Osiris shafts that located down 60 feet near the Sphinx. All the discoveries that I tried to reveal made lots of important understanding for the first time about the pyramids. The Giza pyramids is in my heart because I have been writing my doctorate and all my excavation, and most of my books were really made about this site. And every day we just revealed evidence for the first time about how the Great Pyramid was built. They found to the south of the Great Pyramid evidence about the ramp that the Egyptian used to transport the stones on that ramp to build the pyramid. And revealing the secret doors inside the Great Pyramid is something really that I'm doing now because everyone is looking forward for that. Everyone is waiting for me to send another robot inside the Great Pyramid to see what's behind the two doors inside the south tunnel inside the Great Pyramid, and also about the other door inside the northern tunnel of the Great Pyramid. I think the mystery of this pyramid, I hope that we can solve in 2009.
What do you think could be behind there? My gosh, it's incredible.
Some people believe that this could be doors for the king to open, symbolic doors for the king to open to go to paradise.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really think that this is not true. I really think that the Khufu's burial chamber cannot be one of the three inside the pyramid. I think a king like Khufu, who built these great monuments, will never build a pyramid with his burial chamber to be known for everyone. And this is why we have a text written later than Khufu, and it says that he was looking for the secret of the God of wisdom. Then he can design his tomb. I do believe that these doors are like key of hiding the burial chamber of the king.
There has been talk. Robert Bovall wrote a book of the Orion mystery, and he said that the pyramids may have been laid out as the belt in Orion, the constellation. What do you think?
You know, this is an old theory. It's gone with the wind now. Robert Bovall just used computer to make a theory that has been studied by astronomer and by myself and my friend Mark Leiner, and all of us proved that he tried to set some of the pyramids down here with some of the stars in the Orion constellation, but he did not use all the stars to fit with all the pyramids.
It was just then an archaeological wonder, I would guess.
Yeah, it is.
Zahi, stay with us for about 30 more minutes. Would you like to take some phone calls from listeners?
Okay.
All right, we'll do that. We're going to take this quick break, and then we'll come right back with Dr. Zahi Hawass. We've got him for just 30 more minutes. He's live in Egypt. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.